Tomorrow, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in two cases that look at race-conscious university admissions. Both cases have to do with the University of Michigan, the undergraduate program, and the law school. For undergrads, the university uses a point system. African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans get an extra 20 out of 150 points. The university says it is constitutional to use race as a plus factor in its admission point system.
The term plus factor was used by the late Justice Lewis Powell in a 1978 Supreme Court case that dealt with the admissions policies at the University of California, Davis. That case, known as Bakke, looked at UC Davis's affirmative action program, which set aside a number of slots for minority students. Justice Powell agreed that the policy at UC Davis violated the students' 14th Amendment rights, but he also wrote that race could be used as one of several factors in the admissions process.
To discuss the University of Michigan case that is before the court tomorrow, we called Christopher Edley, a professor at Harvard Law School and co-director of the Civil Rights Project at Harvard, and Charles Freed, a constitutional law professor, also at Harvard Law School, and former U.S. Solicitor General. Professor Freed does not think that the admissions policies at the University of Michigan meet the test outlined by Justice Powell in the Bakke decision.
Justice Powell said that it's all right to consider race, among other matters, if everybody is competing with everybody else. And so you've got a pool and you're just considering the people, and here you're considering a white applicant who has very high grades but never stepped outside of the library, and you have a minority applicant who has less good grades but has worked with underprivileged children and so on. And you can take all that into account. But what Michigan seems to do is to work towards a system which more or less is a two-track system. And I think Justice Powell and Bakke said you can't have a two-track system.
Professor Freed, how is that different from granting preferential treatment to students who show a certain athletic prowess or happen to play the tuba or the oboe, if that's something that you need to round out your student body?
The main difference is the Constitution doesn't address tuba preferences. It does, however, address race.
Well, if I can jump in here.
Professor Edley?
I think Charles is more than half right when he says that. I think that under the Constitution and because of our history, if nothing else, race is different. And the mere fact that one can have a certain strategy with respect to athletes or with respect to wealth or alumni status doesn't in and of itself mean that it's all right to pay special attention to race. But what it does demonstrate, I think, is that all of these institutions recognize that there are many definitions of merit. And it is grossly simplistic to say that everyone should be or could be admitted on the basis of narrow criteria based on, say, tests and grades alone. But having said that, I do want to take a little bit of issue with something that Charles said. The Michigan undergraduate system, and we're just talking about the undergraduate system here for the moment, of 20 points for underrepresented minorities, those same 20 points are available on the basis of socioeconomic disadvantage or on the basis of having gone to a disadvantaged high school, on the basis of some special criteria, some special need identified by the provost of the university. I guess somebody with an interest in celestial mechanics, perhaps. What I want to emphasize here is that it's a mischaracterization to say that those 20 points are awarded if and only if you are an underrepresented minority.
Professor Freed, could you point out the strengths and the weaknesses in the argument made by the lawyers who are supporting affirmative action at the University of Michigan?
Yes, the strengths are, there are two strengths. First, that undoubtedly the race of some people is an important aspect of their experience, of their personality, of their capability. Undoubtedly, that's one thing. The second thing is undoubtedly, it would be a disaster if our public institutions, institutions of higher learning, were to experience what is sometimes referred to as resegregation. That would be terrible. The weakness is that by making race almost permanently, and that's the trouble, this is endless, almost permanently, an automatic basis for preference in every case, we are making ourselves into a racially segmented society. And we are working against progress towards the day when there are no castes here. And by digging this in and by making it a formal entitlement, because that's what it's becoming, that is something that divides us, does not bring us together.
Professor Edley?
The strength, I believe, is a very fundamental one, and that is there is a moral cost to using immutable factors such as race as a factor in decision-making or allocating resources. There is a moral cost. The harder question, of course, is under what circumstances should we be willing to pay that cost in order to achieve some other things that we must care about? On the other hand, there are very substantial weaknesses in their argument. One is simply that even the administration concedes that the interest in ethnic and racial inclusivity is a very, very strong one, although they don't use the magic constitutional words of compelling interest. And the dramatic testimony from so many friends of the court, amicus curiae, demonstrates that it would be truly radical if this court were to disagree with that basic proposition about the importance of diversity. Secondly, I think it is certainly a weakness to argue that there are race-neutral alternatives for achieving the same basic end. And finally, let me just add that it is not true that this is being locked in forever. Affirmative action that is race-sensitive should end when it's no longer needed. And it will no longer be needed when and if the K-12 pipeline is repaired so that the pool naturally and automatically reflects the diversity of America. But until that day, I think Clinton had it right. We need to mend it, not end it.
We'll have to leave it there. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Christopher Edley and Charles Freed are both professors at Harvard Law School.